This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 107 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stofkol.
Friday wrap-up recap, hashtag 107. Let's do this. What's up, TK?
Hey, mate. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How you feeling?
Doing really well. Really excited. We're going to do it a little bit differently today. We've had two great guests to kick off the week with Jessica Watson and Lane Norton. But, you know, we've got what we both believe will be the next UFC welterweight champion in Stephen Thompson joining us in about 10 minutes' time. So we are pumped.
Yeah, stay tuned, man. Wonderboy fights in the welterweight division. He fought a few months ago against the current champion, Tyron Woodley. It finished in a draw, which is very rarely seen. And the kid is unblemished record, kickboxing record, national champ, never lost, and only has one blemish on his MMA career. And the dude is super motivational, a nice guy. You get the gist when you talk to Stephen. He's one of the boys that you just want to sit, you know, have a couple beers with and just pick his brain.
Yeah, hell yeah. I think what I scored the fight last time was 3-2 in favor of Stephen, but unfortunately...
You had Wonderboy winning.
No, I had a draw because I gave one of the rounds 10-8 to Tyron.
Yeah, was it four?
Yeah, I think so.
The guillotine round.
Oh, no, I actually gave that 10-9 because the way Stephen came
finished,
back. It was the round one that I gave 10-8.
Guys, our fans listening who don't know what we're talking about, before this interview... If you want to press pause, go to YouTube and just type in Wonderboy versus Woodley and watch what comes up. It's like a display of grit, determination, athleticism, striking, and two guys in their prime, bodies optimized, going to war for you. And I'm stoked to share this with you guys.
It's actually a great matchup. Tall guy versus short guy. Yeah. Muscle-bound guy versus lean.
Speed.
You know, power versus speed, the contrasting styles.
Woodley's a wrestler. Wonderboy's a striker.
It's an amazing matchup. It's actually one of the best in UFC.
It's one of those things. Will Wonderboy be able to figure out, or will Woodley be able to figure out Wonderboy's space and distance? Wonderboy's very unorthodox in his style. He's not this flat-footed type of Muay Thai striker. He's on his toes, bumping up and down, and like an orthodox fighter would use his left as a jab, he doesn't use the arm, the jab. He uses his left front leg kick as his jab. So it makes for exciting strikes. He's had some amazing highlight reel head kick knockouts in the past, and they've already fought. They just fought not too long ago. So what you and I were talking about is it's going to come down to who has more room to learn from that last fight. Like, was Woodley at his full potential and couldn't finish him? Did Wonderboy get lucky by not getting tapped with that guillotine?
Yeah.
There's so many of these questions that are going to be answered in March, and it's going to be exciting to watch how this unfolds.
Hell yeah. It's going to be great to get any insights in a few minutes' time. Now, guys, just taking you back to those two episodes that we had earlier in the week, there's some great take-home points from both Jessica Watson and Lane Norton. We're going to pick out a couple that we think that we just want to reinforce in your minds today. I think Jess actually made some great points about leadership, and I know... You know, given your background, you know, you love talking about leadership too, Johnny. So one of the really important ones that I actually wrote out was, you know, it was about, you know, as much as a solitude and alone the actual experience was, she really, you know, that teamwork it took to actually prepare the boat and also sharing the dream. So I think that's very, very important, the fact that, you know, you should be sharing that dream with everyone else. And I think that's what we're kind of doing with this podcast now. The fact that I think for me and you talking to everyone, all these successful people and, you know, people that we idolize and some influences on our careers as well, we want to share this with people, and that's what we're doing this, man.
And it's a two-way street, though, because our guests, like Jessica and Lane, they're also sharing. So it becomes this reciprocation of intent with wanting to help people on a broader scale. We could easily have these conversations and not share them. But the intent, like you said, is we want to impact people. We want to show people that there isn't a, everybody is pretty much wired with the same tools. We have the same abilities pretty much. God forbid you were born with, you know, a debilitating disorder, but the headspace of a Jessica Watson and her, like, what I took from that is, like, fear used to be a big player in my life. Like, being afraid of the future, being afraid of getting hurt, having fear of doing what I really want to do, so I'll just be safe. You know, maybe I won't take that course, or I won't make myself vulnerable and, you know, want to get to know new people. She, at such a young age, was able to identify what she wanted to do, a goal, like she said, at 11 years old that manifested at 16, and just acted the opposite of fear. Like, she acted in love of her passion and just wanting to go for it. And I think that that is very important.
I'm actually really glad that you brought up goals. She spoke about it in the episode about us having to put our own value on goals, what she was meaning by that. Remember when I asked her, like, kind of where do you go from already achieving such a big achievement at 16 years old? And then she's saying that, you know, what was equally as important to her was going to university, getting a driver's license, being able to help people in the community. So I think sometimes we look in the, you know, to the broader, to our friends and family, and sometimes our expectations are their expectations instead of our own. So I think she made some great points about creating your own value on your own goals, because it's what's important to you, not to anyone else.
It reminds me of Demartini when he was talking about ensuring, though, a very important part about having those goals is ensuring that your values and your goals are congruent together. They're aligned, not to just be, say she's a 16-year-old and she's really into punk music, but she wanted to, you know, surf the biggest waves and never been on a surfboard because she saw a surfing video. Yeah, her goals aren't congruent with, you know, her strengths and her values, if that were the case. And it goes to show you her, at a young age, her molding, her circle of influence, the trust she had in her parents, because it, for, as a 16-year-old, you're a kid. So it really took her parents to support her, motivate her, and ensure that she was on the right page and that she could actually accomplish that. And that is something that goes unseen or unheard, because, sad to say, I feel a lot of our, a lot of problems kind of could arise when you have these young people who just feel unsupported or maybe disenfranchised. So shout out to her parents and any parents listening who actually see a young kid or have a young kid and support what they want to do and mold that rather than separate them from what they really want to achieve, because, like you said, it's not congruent with the parents' goals.
Yeah, I think that's a great take on points. Now back to Bio Lane. Bio Lane, that was an interesting, I really enjoyed that.
I just want to arm wrestle that dude.
I enjoyed a lot of the whole thing, but I really, when you guys kind of started bantering about the baseball at the end, that was some great stuff, you know what I mean? That really showed his true personality, because, you know, he's a very professional guy, you know, got all these different credentials, but, you know, it's good to see him break out and just be one of the lads, you know, it's good.
And we can't predict that. It came up, like, I didn't find that, it wasn't one of these things that, oh, let me sneak a baseball question in because I played and I love the sport.
Yeah.
But that's where the beauty and the magic of talking to people, guys. Like, you don't have to have a podcast or a show syndicate, you know, nationally syndicated to talk to people. Like, through conversation, you learn from people, and then you could get more and more deeper, and then that shows a sign that you actually give a fuck about who you're spending time with, and that's how bonds are formed. Like, when he broke, like, the posters on the wall, and, you know, I'm not even a Cubs fan. I'm an Indians fan, but I'm a baseball fan. So,
but so relatable, I guess, for you.
Yeah, and to see, like, we got 35-year-old, successful entrepreneur, businessman Lane Norton for the first half, and then as soon as baseball came up, it's something I like. We're all just that 7-year-old kid. Still, even though we grow and this body vehicle changes and, you know, we all get old, our spirit, I feel, you know, it all goes back to when we were young and kids and what we used to enjoy.
But it makes you feel good, right?
Yeah, it was my favorite part of the interview.
Yeah, man.
We could have shot the shit about baseball, players we liked. That could have been a whole podcast.
But think about it like this way. It's just like when we were in our childhood, you know, between that age, ages between like, you know, 8 to 15, and all we thought about was just kind of playing sport and just watching our idols on TV, you know. Life was easy, you know what I mean? That
mimicking
was good.
Yeah, the stress, I guess there's, you know, there's parallels or there's, easy is an interesting one. It's more, I think I was more, as a 12-year-old, I remember very, very vaguely before my football games, the night before, I would go to my buddy's house, Seth, and we would mimic our favorite NFL players and how they tackled. Like, I played offense and defense, but linebacker was my favorite position. I liked to hit people. And there was a guy who played for the Vikings when I was a kid named Jack Del Rio, and he used to just level dudes. So we would practice and mimic, and at the time, I was so focused and locked in. All kids are selfish. You know what I mean? Because you're so drawn into that vacuum that you feel is your existence. I feel in a way, though, as we get older and we get a little bit tarnished by life, and maybe we get our heart broken, or we lose friends and family.
Yeah.
I guess we kind of could forget and lose that focus. Like, think about if you still had some of that discipline when you were a young kid. We used to wake up at the same time every day. You would eat lunch at the same time every day. Yeah. To imagine to have that discipline, but adult-like productivity, I think that could be really important for people's like fulfillment and success. If you could just hone in that 12-year-old version of yourself, if you really loved something, and remember that focus you used to put into it, harness that and do that now.
Yeah, I've got actually a question for you. You know, you just brought up Del Rio. Did you guys, when you were younger, used to say that you were someone?
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, when we were playing football, we used to say, "I'm him, and you can't be him."
Like, yeah, for sure. And we would do in the football one. We would do in the swimming pool. Like the 1 month out of the year was nice, but maybe that's why it's burned into my memory of being Jack Del Rio on defense and on offense. I'm a Browns fan, and Rio was a Viking, but I was also a Viking on offense. Robert Smith, he was an Ohio State Buckeye, and he had a short career in the NFL, but an NFL record for, I think it's most yards per carry. So average. He averaged something like his whole career, like 6+ yards a carry. But it was like, yeah, I'm Robert Smith. You can't tackle
me. Yeah, exactly.
And you become that person. Right? Imagine if you did that now. Like, you before the show, you know, I'm Larry King. Fuck with me. You know what I mean? Like,
I think it's a great take-home point, guys. It's like, let your inner child come out. Sometimes you just gotta be that little inner child, and it's cool. It's good mindset,
dude. Man, as adults, we take life so seriously, and like we said, it's hard not to. But this time is limited, man. It's short. It's really short, and you know it's important to not lose who that child is. It's important to remember that, you know, it's only a matter of time that separates that when you were at your like. The most fun. Like, do you have a memory? It's weird how our memory holds on to certain moments of like, if I ask you now as a kid, what was like a very fun memory of yours? And do you mind sharing it?
Yeah, man. When we were younger, we used to go to this place called Australia's Wonderland, which was a theme park. It was where I lived. It was actually a pretty short drive. It was only about 10 minutes drive from where I lived. So all the roller coasters, and this was huge. They actually shut it down, which is pretty sad, and they made an industrial sort of side out of it. But there used to be every Saturday, everyone used to go because it used to be $5 after 5. So you used to spend like 5 hours there from 5 to 10, and it wasn't that expensive.
Was it unsupervised chaos?
Well, it was like whoever made like the Flintstones and all those kind of characters.
I'm talking from a child. Did you have your parents down your neck, or you were just unsupervised to roam the streets of the park?
A bit of both. Yeah, you know, there was a time we had to meet up or whatever, but me and my brother got to ride, and some of my cousins used to go, and our friends, and everyone used to have sometimes a Wonder Pass, which used to get instant entry, so it was pretty cool. Yeah. What about you, man?
My 12-year-old year was like my peak. I think I was culminated at 12. We won, so at 12 I played my baseball team, Uptown Kiwanis, man, south side of Youngstown. That team had, you know, I played on it. A former boxing world champion, Kelly Pavlik, was my catcher. And we were just, they had a parade for our team. We were winning all-star tournaments. I was the pitcher. Kelly caught. But we would go to the field even if our teams didn't play. Like, our parents, my pops, would take me to Uptown on, like, a Friday or Saturday, drop me off, and all the boys from other teams would just be there hanging out at the park, and we would play this game called Pickle and Hot Box, and then Three Flags Up. And, you know, all games with a baseball included, but they were competitive. And, dude, we would get there and then wouldn't leave until we had to stop playing because the sun would go down.
Yeah.
And I miss those days. So, like, we were at the beach yesterday with some of the boys from the gym, and there was a ball involved. And, you know, just it reminded me of, man, how much I miss that.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, being in that scenario of, like, competing, showing skills, having fun with your friends, and, like, just being so lost in the magic of, like, group or... You know what I'm trying to say
there?
I think
you'll see it again, though. One day you'll have a child, and you'll see them experiencing what you went through, and I think it'll be a brilliant moment for them.
Yeah, I think anyone out there who's, like, stuck in an office or... If you're listening to the show, first off, you're already thinking that maybe there is... You know, that's what we want to do. We want to make people think. And maybe just pick a basketball up. When's the last time, if you like basketball, when's the last time you went to a court by yourself and shot baskets?
Yeah.
Or if it was, like... You know, you were a swimmer. I think it's really important to not lose complete contact with what we enjoyed with when we were kids.
Inner child, man. Inner child.
So true.
Yeah, for sure. All right, guys. Steve's online, so we're going to get straight to this interview. So stay tuned for Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. All right, our special guest is Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Stephen is a star of the UFC's welterweight division and will be contesting a rematch with champion Tyrone Woodley on March 4. Steve has an impressive record of 13-1-1 while also compiling a kickboxing record of 56-0. We welcome Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Steve, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
Thanks.
Love being on with you guys.
Yeah, man. Thanks a lot. Where are you at? Are you in South Carolina now? Where are you doing your camp?
Yeah, South Carolina. Spending most of my time here, bringing guys in. I had Josh Koscheck come in, you know, strong wrestler, about the same size. I had my buddy Jiu-Jitsu, like Wiz, Daniel O'Brien coming in, who's, you know, just sick at Jiu-Jitsu, helping out with my ground game. Walking around heavier now. I was walking around really too light in my last fight. Especially when you're fighting Tyrone, you got to be, you know, I got to walk around heavier. He's a monster. So camp's going great, man. Spending my most time here and ready to throw down in about a week and a half.
Excellent. So, yeah, your Australian fans want to know what the preparation is for you to becoming the next welterweight champion. Have you visualized this moment? What does it feel like, and are you ready?
Oh, man, I'm so ready. You know, that's one of the things that I always visualize. You know, it's not defeat him. You know, I don't visualize a knockout. All I visualize is my hand being raised at the end with that belt around my waist. A lot of times you visualize a knockout and you go out there and you try and knock your opponent out. Sometimes it doesn't happen, or you tire yourself out, you know, trying to knock your opponent out. When, you know, just let it happen. You know, I go out there. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I'm ready for whatever. So I'm in great shape. I'm bigger. I'm stronger. And, man, you guys are going to see a different Steve Wonderboy Thompson come March 4th.
Hell yeah, that word visualization, that's not something I hear a lot of people talk about. Where's the origins of that come from?
You know what? It's just something I've always done. You know, my dad's trained fighters for you know, since before I was born, man. And, you know, we've been a team since, you know, every step of the way. And, you know, it's just something he always has me visualize, has his fighters visualize is the win. Not how you're going to do it, but what does it look like? You know, what do you see at the end of this fight? You know, your hand raised, visualize your hand being raised, visualize, of course, in your training and, of course, that belt around your waist and, you know, things like that. It's always something that we've always focused on. Even after sparring sessions, you know, we sit down and we focus on just on the positive things about the fight. A lot of times you can focus on the negative things. What if my opponent does this? What if he does that? What if he does this? And you're so focused on what your opponent's doing, you're not thinking about, hey, you know, what am I going to do out there? You know, that's what you should be focused on is what, you know, what's your game plan, what's your attack's going to be.
Could you share with us maybe the biggest lesson you learned from your last fight with Tyron that ended up in a draw?
You know what? It's just letting my hands go. My last fight, I was very hesitant. I don't know if you saw the fight or not. I was very hesitant.
We watched it for sure.
The kicks and man, and didn't throw the kicks and punches that I normally do, and. I was really disappointed just in the fact that, you know, I wasn't 100%. I didn't go out there and you didn't see, you know, the best Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. And so just going out there and letting it go. You know what? We fought to a draw. I took his best shot. Even helped him off the canvas in that fourth round.
Yeah.
And all I can do is go out there and just have some fun, man. Go out there and do my thing. And that's what I want to do. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to push it. I want to push the pace, you know, working my kicks, working different angles, keeping the same game plan, just actually executing it this time. You know, I didn't do that last. I don't know why. I don't know if it was because, you know, it was the biggest fight in UFC history, and or if it's, you know, watching my brother-in-law get kneed in the head, Chris Weidman.
Chris, it was tough, man.
I don't know, but no excuses. That was on me, and I'm just going to go back and train harder and be a better fighter when I step out there.
Yeah, what surprised you most about Tyrone?
To be honest, it was his strength in the ground. I mean, striking, if you've seen him fight once, you've seen him fight 100 times. I mean, he's very he does this kind of the same thing. You know, we went back, and even this camp, we watched where he fought his last fight in Strikeforce, Nate Marquardt, all the way up until this fight. And he doesn't make a whole lot of changes, you know. But he's very good at his game plan. He's explosive. He's very fast. He's very powerful. Very strong in the clinch situation positions. So, you know what, he's a powerful dude, man. I think it's his power more than anything. I threw a leg kick in the first round, you know, to kind of see how his hands were going to react to it. Dadgummit, if he didn't catch it, ended up taking me down. And when he was on top, I could feel his strength. So walking on heavier, and got some really big, strong guys that I'm rolling with, wrestling with. So we'll be ready for his power next time.
Steven, Tristan and I watched that fight, and my roommate is a UFC strawweight. So it's me, Tristan, and her watching the fight, and talk to us a little bit about the guillotine, because as it went to the ground and, you know, he locks that down on you, I was saying, I thought it was hands down over. I thought, you know, the ref was going to step in, and my roommate Alex, she was like, no, let him go, let him go, let him go. And then when you got out of it, it was like, holy shit, it's a whole new fight. What was going through your head, and how close were you from tapping?
You know what? In that fourth round, I took one shot, ended up, it was like a flash knockdown, popped right back up. It was like one threat right after the next. I got hit again, ended up dropping, weathered the storm from down there. Next thing you know, I'm in the guillotine, you know. It was like one shot, one threat, right into the guillotine. He ended up pulling guard, trying to tighten that bad boy up. And it was tight, to be honest with you. It was tight. But I was talking to myself during the fight as I'm talking to you now. And I know Tyron here. I don't know if you heard me or not, but I said, all these people came to watch me fight. I am not going to tap. I'm not going to tap. And as soon as I said that, I could feel his arm start to gas out. And I was like, now's my chance to get out. So I ended up getting out, finishing up. I think it was like a minute 30 on top or something like that. And yeah, man, I just told myself, you know, this was a guillotine. This is a title fight. I'm not going to tap. I'm not going to do it. Now, if it was like an arm bar or a heel hook or something, obviously, you know, you're going to do that. You don't want to be out for a year. But guillotine or rear naked choke, come on, man. It's a title fight. I'm going out. I'm going out like that.
Yeah. Do you wish it happened earlier in the fight? Because your body language coming out of it, you just look like you were straight on top. If that happened in the first round, it looked like it, because he gave you everything that he had, and it looked like you not tapping, it nearly deflated him. Did you get that same sense being in the octagon with him?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I felt that, you know, and especially, you know, in that fifth round, I was like, I got my second win. I was like, you know what, I took his best shot. Going to that fifth round, I was like, you know what, took his best shot, now I can go out there and do my thing. But one of the things that I really didn't do in that fifth round was play some really good power shots, which I go back and beat myself up, you know, and when I go back and watch the fight. But, yeah, man, I felt great in that fifth round. I could have gone two more after that. So the plan is, you know, to go out there and push that pace that way every step of the way. When I fought Rory McDonald, I felt like there was a threat. It had to be on point every round. And I just didn't feel that way when I was fighting against Tyron. You know, I was a little slow in some of my reactions, and I just wasn't focused from start to finish.
Yeah, the Hendricks fight as well, it was like you were plugged into a wall, like with electricity. Coming straight, do you think a lot of it has to do, we talked to a lot of fighters, do you think if Tyron would have lost that fight, or maybe in a different dimension, Tyron loses against Robbie, he's coming off of a loss when you fight him, do you think your style would have been different to that he's coming off a win and he's the champ, and then you adjusted your style to hesitate a little bit, or do you think that wasn't an issue?
You know what, no, I don't think it was. I don't, you know, it wasn't the game plan, and the plan was to go out there and just kind of push the pace and, you know, keep the distance, but get him flinching a lot. Because when you flinch a lot, especially a big, powerful guy, they actually tires you out. A lot of guys come in for training, and I'll just do that for one round. And next thing you know, you look at them, they're breathing hard, just flinching, and get them to react. You know, not even really trying to hit them, just kind of in and out, make them think that you're going to hit them. You know what? I really didn't. I didn't expect him to back up as much, you know, as he did. He's a very intelligent guy, very smart fighter. He knows when the guys that are very aggressive, those are the guys I put away that are, you know, end up running into strikes. So he backed up, which made me come to him. And when I come to him, he just obviously used that big power hand to hit me with it. So, yeah, man. So I just got to be more cautious when I go in, when I cover that distance.
Yeah, other than that tie, the only blemish on your record in both sports is that Matt Brown fight. But you were a young UFC fighter at the time, just figuring things out. Could you share maybe a lesson you learned during that fight?
You know what? There was a lot of things going on. When I fought Matt Brown, you know, there was a lot of things that we were doing wrong. One of them was our weight cut. I hired a new strength and conditioning coach for that fight, and I was walking around like 210.
Jeez,
I was like, I was literally doing like bodybuilding exercise. Of course, we didn't know what we were doing. You know what I mean? We had no idea. And I cut from like, I think it was like 205 down to 170 in like 2 days, and it about killed me.
That's crazy.
And when I stepped in the octagon, I was done in 30 minutes. I was 30 minutes in, I was done. Like, I was tired. My legs were done. I remember looking over and looking at my dad. He's like, what are you doing? You know? But, of course, even when I fight him or anybody I fight, you know, I'm going to give him hell no matter what. But I learned so much from that fight and things, you know, to do, what not to do. Obviously, my ground game, my wrestling defense. And if it wasn't for that fight, I wouldn't be where I am today. You know, we're the type of guys that, you know, in our gym, you know, we always go back and we always work on different stuff and try and progress. You know, you got to evolve in this sport. And if you don't, you're going to fall off to the wayside. I mean, you look at guys like Warren McDonald, he's one of the best for a reason, you know. He was a very difficult guy to prepare for just because he's always changing. You'll see him fight, you know, the next time he's doing something different. So, oh, man, it was definitely a chess match. But that Matt Brown fight was definitely one of my favorites, to be honest with you.
It was a war, man. You had him hurt, and it was just a back-and-forth will of attrition. Steven, I lived for a few years, a few summers in South Carolina in Myrtle Beach. And I know that's, you know, you're from...
Yeah, it's
a little bit known for, you know, a party town. But was there a time in your career, I know your dad is a decorated, you know, athlete and coach. Was ever a time to where you are now, but when you were a younger fighter, that it was tough to get sparring partners? You mentioned earlier Koscheck came down. He was a contender in the UFC for a long time. To where now they probably, you make the call and they come. Was this ever an issue trying to get sparring partners for you to come to South Carolina?
You know what? It was. And there's a lot of gyms, a lot of schools out there who I guess kind of greedy. They don't let their students venture out, you know, go to different gyms and spar with different people. You have to do that, you know. It was very difficult for me to bring guys in, so we went to them, you know. We went up to TriStar to train with George St. Pierre. We went to Black House to train with Leo Tomachita, Anderson Silva. So we went to ATT, we went to Black Zillions, we went everywhere, man, just to get different sparring partners, to get different feels, because, you know, if you spar the same guys over and over again, you know, you're not going to progress, because you figure them out, you know, and you got to get a new taste, get a new feel with different people, and of course, but you have to find the right schools, the right gyms. You know, so there are some gyms I went to, and as soon as you stepped on the mat, it was like you had to fend for your life. Like they were trying to kill you. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
You got to find good places to go to. And one of them obviously was up at TriStar, which just those guys were awesome. And of course, I now go up and train with Ray Longo, Chris Weidman, Matt Serra. Those guys are like family. So you got to find those good places.
What was it like? Was Firas Zarabi? Did you spend a lot of time with him?
Cool dude, man. Yeah, Firas and even Eamon. I think Eamon's a hobby supposed to be fighting this weekend. I'm pretty sure. I think he signed it. Eamon's is Faraz's brother.
All right.
But, yeah, I was actually fighting in Montreal, Canada. This was before I fought MMA. And I was fighting, it was a kickboxing fight, and I look over, and George St. Pierre and Farhad Zahabi was in my opponent's corner. I was like, oh my gosh. Anyway, I ended up knocking the guy, I think, in the fifth round. And after the fight, Farhad came up and said, hey, man, you know, would love to, for you to come up and, you know, help George be a sparring partner for his camps. And, of course, I didn't know MMA at all. You know, I kind of put the jiu-jitsu and wrestling on the back burner because I was focused on kickboxing. So I was like, heck yeah, man. And they were actually my inspiration to switch from kickboxing to mixed martial arts. I started doing more jiu-jitsu, more wrestling, just to be a better sparring partner for George. And then next thing you know, Rashad Evans is calling, asked for me, you know, because he was getting ready to fight Lyoto Machida. Nate Marquardt. So I'm like, man, I'm training with these champions, these guys. Why not fight in the sport, you know? So they were my inspiration to switch from kickboxing to mixed martial arts.
Yeah. Steve, can we talk about your inner circle a little bit? You know, you brought up before with Chris Weidman and some of the other fighters that you surround yourself to prepare yourself for fights. In terms of your coaching staff and your family, who are those people in your inner circle that help you really achieve what you've done so far, man?
You know what? I wouldn't be where I am, A, if it wasn't for my family. You know, we're a fighting family. I got two brothers and two sisters, my mom, my dad, my cousins. We all train martial arts. And my mom and my dad make sacrifices for me. My coaches, my sparring partners who, you know, sacrifice their bodies pretty much for sparring.
Yeah.
And these guys, man, everybody sees this sport as, when they watch it on TV, just me and our opponent. So, and it can be a very selfish sport. You know, there's a lot of people out there, you know, fighters are selfish, man. They really are. A lot of them are. But they don't see the people that help you get there. They don't see the sparring sessions. They don't see the training, the guys coming in, who are the guys that come and cut the weight with you. You know, we're a team. Even though you just see me out there, I've got a team behind me, backing me up. And those are most important is my family. And, of course, my coaches, my sparring partners, man. Those are the guys that I train with, we live with, we beat each other up, you know, and we got our ups and our downs together. But those are the type of people that bring you back up. You know, after that Matt Brown fight, of course, I was back in the gym the next day. My friends, my training partners, like, no, we're going to train, we're going to work on this. And it's sad to see a lot of these fighters, they don't have that support, you know. They don't have that support. I mean, not to say any names, but, I mean, Ronda Rousey, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after that one loss, you know, it was like her whole world ended. I mean, where were the people at to bring her back up? I mean, she may have it. I just didn't see it. You just didn't see it, just kind of what she was saying on TVs and some of her interviews. You know, where are those people?
Yeah, you're right, because when Connor lost and love her. Yeah, when Connor lost and she lost, there was two separately different things. Like,
Exactly. I know Connor's got a great support system, too. Of course, his wife and the guys he's trained with for many years, you know. Those guys have your back, but it's sad to see those people who are at the top of the game not have that support and kind of go down from there, you know?
All right, Steve, just to finish things up, we're going to hit personality round. So we've got a couple of personality questions. Johnny's got the first one.
Yeah, to, you know, segue off of what you said, going down and having people having your back. Steven, when you have a bad day, could you share some insight into our fans listening, your fans, on what helps you get through those moments of adversity?
Yeah, man. You know, I've always been a very positive guy. You know, always been a very positive guy. You know, one of the worst times of my life was when I tore every ligament in my left leg. Tore everything, man. And the doctor told me I would never fight again. That's what he said. Like, this is my sport, man. This is what I've been doing since I was 3 years old. You know what? There are going to be times in your life where there's going to be things that are going to try and prevent you from your goals. And it doesn't matter what it is. You know what I mean? And you have to stay positive. You got to stay headstrong and know that, hey, no, if I put my mind to it, I can do it. I was back after surgery on my knee. I was back in the gym the next day, sitting in a chair with my leg propped up, hitting the bag. Wow. And now look where I am. I'm in one of the biggest fight sports in the world, number one contender, getting ready to fight for the title. I mean, my doctor looked at me and was like, what the heck? You know, why did I even say that?
Yeah.
And he doesn't even say that to his people anymore, you know? You just got to stay positive, man, and surround yourself with people, very positive people, who are going to bring you up.
Yeah,
so, and that's what I do. You got to surround yourself with those kind of people.
Okay, Steve, next one. We're going to take you back to your childhood. What posters did you have on your wall growing up, man?
Dude, I had Ninja Turtle posters, and I had, I don't know if you guys remember Shokasugi. He was like a ninja actor back in the day. He had so many ninja movies out there. I was like a huge ninja fan.
Wow.
The guy's name was Shokasugi. You could probably Google him, but he was like, I've always wanted to be a ninja, man, and I don't know if you guys know this, but I am one now.
what Ninja Turtle were you, brother?
my favorite Ninja Turtle was obviously, of course, I had two, Leonardo and Michelangelo. Mikey's like everybody's fave, you know? I didn't want to be like everybody else. And Leonardo, he was the leader.
He was
the guy that kind of organized the plan, you know, the game plan. I like that guy, you know, the leader guy. And that's something that, my dad has always talked to me about, you know, being the leader. You know, the rate of the pack is always determined by the speed of the leader. And I try to be that person out there in the gym and in class.
So, Steven, so three of your closest friends are sitting at a table and you're not in the room. What are they saying about you?
Probably how much of an idiot I am. No, man. Of course, I'm 34. I just turned 34 years old. Can't even talk right now. Still watching cartoons, man.
We're all the same age.
Dad pisses me off. My dad's like, I piss him off. So he's like, dude, you're 34 year old. You're over here talking about cartoons. What are you doing, man? You know, I'm a huge anime fan. I don't know, man. They're probably just cracking up on how retarded I am. So, you know, half the time. I love to cut up. I like to crack. I like to joke around with people, make everybody smile. And that's just who I am, man. I'm kind of like the Michelangelo, I guess you could say, of the group.
Boom. Okay, last one, man. It's Steven Thompson. You're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites. Now, the only rules, can't be anyone, family or friends, but it can be anyone dead or alive. Who are your 5 invites going to?
Oh, man. 5 people?
5, man.
Did you say 5?
Yeah, brother.
All right. Number 1, Bruce Lee, who is the man and predicted mixed martial arts. You know, talked about all martial arts coming together.
Hell yeah.
Definitely Chuck Liddell. He was a Kenpo guy, karate guy. We fought on the same kickboxing circus as each other. Let's see here. Oh my goodness, this is a hard one. let's see. For some reason, I'm always Keanu Reeves.
Oh yeah,
he's like a really cool guy. Just watched the new
documentary.
No, not the documentary. I just watched his new.
He's on the cover of Men's movie, Fitness, too.
John Wick.
Yeah.
Have you seen John Wick, too?
Not yet. I want to, man.
His preparation for that fight, like the jiu-jitsu and the gun. He was training in guns. It was pretty cool to watch him do all that kind of stuff.
Check it out.
He's a cool dude.
He's actually on the front cover of Men's Fitness, man. So check that out.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I just saw it. It was an advertisement yesterday, man. So check it out in the local newspaper.
I'll have to check that. I know he's in his 50s. I was like, dang, I mean, he's still kicking it. Okay, so I got Bruce Lee, Chuck Liddell, Keanu Reeves. Let's see. It has to be, like, if it could be anybody, even fictional, I would say Rocky.
Oh, hell Balboa. Yeah. Hell yeah, man.
Rocky Balboa. Rocky Balboa would be freaking awesome.
There it is. Every episode it gets brought up.
Because of me.
It's usually Tristan. Tristan always brings them up, man, every episode.
Oh man. And then finally, let's see. I would have to say Jack Black.
Okay, big one, man.
Steven, man, I know time is valuable. We really appreciate you stopping by the show, and it's a pleasure to watch you fight, man. You're one of my favorite fighters, so thank you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you guys having me on, man. Hope we can do it again after the fight. That'll be awesome.
Yeah, hell yeah. And just before you go, Steve, where can all the people follow you online and on social media, man?
All right, you guys can follow me actually on Twitter and Instagram at WonderboyMMA and Facebook, Steven Wonderboy Thompson.
Awesome. Well, Steve, we know you're going to bring that title home, man. Me and Johnny will be rooting for you. So all the best of luck for March, man, and kill it, brother.
Yeah, brother. Thanks, man.
Thanks, brother. Have a good one, my friend. Bye-bye.
Peace. Guys, that was Wonderboy.
How infectious is his, like, demeanor and his, like, how is
hell
he a fighter?
Yeah, man, he's a brother.
He's a martial artist, man,
hell
right?
Yeah, he's got a great spirit. Considering it's 2 weeks out from the fight, I'm sure he's about to start cutting weight and just, you know, we can think about the mental thing that he's thinking about the fight all day. Really appreciate his time, so that made me even want to go for him even more. Yeah, I was already going for him.
Me too. The fight of his life too, and we only had limited time because he's in camp, but he's also a coach. He coaches young kids, and all you really need to know about Wonderboy is when you hear the bit about how it affected his spirit when he watched his brother-in-law Weidman get knocked out. That was a brutal knockout, and Wonderboy and Weidman was a former champion. That fight happened right before Steven was about to fight Tyron.
Yeah.
And to show that affected him, and you know how it just shows that that kid, you know, he's not one of these fighters. He's not going out trying to hurt people. He's fighting against himself, trying to be better each time.
Yeah, there's plenty of obstacles that night when you think about the crowd.
Largest
the
event.
The event with Conor McGregor and Alvarez that night? No.
He's an adopted, yeah. It was Eddie versus Conor, Madison Square Garden, the first MMA event in New York. Wonderboy is an adopted son of New York because of the connection with Weidman, so he trains up at Longo's camp in New York. The crowd, even though Woodley is from the Midwest, closer to New York than South Carolina, Wonderboy was getting all the love from the fans. Woodley was getting booed at the weigh-ins, and it just shows you that infectious spirit. And I'm not trying to knock Woodley. I like Tyron. He's a hell of a fighter. He's a champ for a reason. It's just it's tough when we do this. You got to pick one, and it's tough to cheer against Wonderboy.
Yeah. Who's your pick, man? What are you thinking?
I think Wonderboy knocks him out.
Really?
I think Wonderboy's figured out that space and distance. I think he's going to use that front kick more to set up a head kick. I'm thinking head kick, and then, that's what I see.
Okay, I've got him by points.
Going five again.
Why I think so, I just think, as I asked Stephen in the actual interview, I just think that Tyron gave him everything he had. He's already seen his best. I don't think he's got anything else. So,
I was impressed with how he handled Tyron's power. Like, when you look at a body like Wonderboy and a body like Robbie Lawler, Robbie only got hit once by Tyron, and that was the fight. That's how Tyron won the belt. Stephen took his best punch a few different times and didn't go out. That shows you his chin, his resilience. That guillotine too, man. I keep going back to that.
No, you got
to
speak about it because when you think about it, that was deep, man.
It was really deep. And what I think it's going to be, it's crazy when you think about the art of fighting and usually highlight reels or these head kick knockouts. With Wonderboy possesses a lot of those. I think that overcoming that guillotine in hindsight will be one of those defining moments of Wonderboy's career. Win or lose in March with the belt. It just shows, I think he earned a lot of newer fans because when you look at his style for what it is, it's flashy, it's super creative, it's unorthodox. You wouldn't look at a Wonderboy style and think, he wants to get in a street fight. He wants to pick you apart volume-wise. He's a volume striker. So I guess there's like a correlation with being a volume striker and not being powerful or maybe resilient in a sense. But to see him take the punch, overcome the guillotine, and still stand there. And like you said, when the fifth round ended, you and I were watching the fight together. I wouldn't have been shocked if they gave it to Stephen.
Yeah.
So he put himself in this situation to still win. And it's what, I'm excited for this upcoming fight to see how it all plays out.
Oh, yeah. I just think those scenarios, the fact that he got out of that guillotine, the fact that he got dropped a couple of times and bounced straight back up.
Yeah, that flash knockdown was it looked like he got shot and then just came back up. What is that?
I just get the impression that the confidence going into this fight is that he's experienced all that Woodley's already can give it to him. So I think you'll see him a lot more on the front foot and chasing Woodley in this second fight. Just like that fifth round when he was kind of dictating the actual ring generalship.
Yep.
If you get what I mean.
Controlling the center of the octagon.
Yeah,
they get scored on that.
Yeah.
That's part of the scoring system.
I think you'll see a different fight this one.
And he said that. And if you look at those fights against Rory McDonald, Johnny Hendricks specifically, Hendricks is a former champion, and he finished him in the first round or early second by just pressuring him and putting Hendricks in a corner to stand and fire. And because of Wonderboy's height and how he utilizes that kick and the jab, it's really difficult for shorter fighters. And I think that's what he's going to change. I think he's going to, like you said, put the pressure the whole time on Woodley, make Woodley fight off of his back against the cage, and just let the hands fly a little bit more.
It's interesting when he said that he's going to put a little bit more weight on for this fight as well, because that was one thing that did stand out, the fact that I think Woodley did outweigh him a little bit. He did look a lot leaner than Tyron was. So what do you reckon the differential was? Probably about 5 pounds on fight?
I would say more 10? Like 15.
10?
Yeah, I know Tyron said on air he walks around at 220.
That's crazy.
And he fights at 170. Now, he's a former college wrestler, high-level wrestler. These guys have been cutting weight since he was probably 14, 15 years old. So he has it down to a T. But when you have a Woodley who walks around at 220, fights at 170, by weigh-ins, Woodley was probably 200 pounds when he was.
Yeah, you think so.
And Wonderboy was probably maybe 185, 190. So that, I don't know if it's possible. Now, I'm not an expert on this. Maybe we could get somebody who's smarter than me on to explain this. But it just seems like too short of a time from fight one to now that he's going to be able to make up that difference in weight.
What is it now, 4
and
months?
Muscle. It's only been 4 months. and you're a coach, and you know I'm a coach, and we know the body mechanics of the length it takes and the time it takes to put on muscle, especially coming from a combat athlete perspective like Steven. I just don't know how much he can put on.
Maybe they'll start the water cut from a higher weight this time around.
But the thing is, he still has to weigh in at 170. It's not like he has a year to go from 170 to 220 and then 6 months start the camp or 4 months and then the week to cut from, we'll say, 210 to 170.
Yeah, we have to get a cutting maybe expert in, because when you think if he came back in, maybe if he started his water flushing out at 190 to get down to 170, maybe this time he might start at 195 to get back down to one. I don't know.
Yeah,
and that's an interesting sort of scenario.
And I think the trick is, though, where the skill comes in is how much weight these guys could put on after the skill and still be at their full potential.
That's true, because when Oscar De La Hoya versus Pacquiao, they made a huge mistake. He didn't put any weight on after his weigh-in. He actually, his body freaked out. And I think Pacquiao ended up nearly being the same weight as him. And then, because he didn't put his water back into his system properly. So I think they fought at 147, and he ended up on the night being like 150 or something when he walks around at 175 or 180 or something.
So he didn't put that weight back on.
They couldn't hydrate him back in. They even used an IV.
He got muscled up.
Yeah, he got smashed.
Yeah, that was Manny.
That's Manny's
one of his first. Was that one of his? Because I know he switched. Didn't he come to America and switch camps middle of his career?
He had been there for a while. That was probably his biggest breakthrough fight, though.
Because people forget about Pacquiao. The kid started at, what, like a 115 fighter?
Yeah.
Or something crazy like that?
It's the lowest one.
105?
Whatever. Yeah, I think it's 105.
Because then you could really see. That's what Chocolatito fights at. Guys, if you want an exciting light fighter, YouTube Chocolatito, Ramon Gonzalez. His style's crazy. But to think that
147.
Pacquiao was that size?
40 pounds in differences.
And then to watch his style evolve, it's, you know, me being a skeptic, I'm kind of skeptical. I want to see the training, how he did that. But to keep his skill set, to keep that speed and power in those, what, five different divisions
He fought at,
he'll go down as one of the legends. I know we were talking earlier, that dream fight scenario, we'd love to see Lomachenko versus Manny. But
that would be great for
maybe we'll put that in the atmosphere.
Guys, thanks for tuning in today. Just to give you a preview for next week, episode 108 on Monday will be Melissa Ambrosini. She is a women's health and wellness advocate here in Australia. She's doing some great things. She actually hit iTunes number one in podcasts. She's just released her own podcast, interviewing a lot of successful people from around the world across different genres. So she's doing great things. She's a great speaker. She's an author. So for guys that don't know much about women, I'll put my hand up.
Yeah, I know nothing.
I've got plenty of questions to ask her. So, guys, tune in for that one. The one I think you're really, really going to enjoy was one that's been on our bucket list for a long time, and that's Brian Rose. Brian hosts the London Reel, and he is an extraordinary gentleman. Degree from MIT,
dude,
Johnny.
Degree from MIT. The parallels he has, if you took Tristan and I on paper, our education and our life's journey, and combined what Tristan and I have done in our 34 years, put it on paper, the parallels that you and I have with him, like, for instance, he's an American, migrated to a different country, England, started a show. His education started in finance, was a trader.
It's interesting.
You know, which you did. And to see the success of the London Reel, to be able to pick his brain on what to expect, the processes, his journey. He never gives interviews. So we feel like this is one of those. You know, he's Joe Rogan-esque for sure.
Oh, hell yeah.
He is. If you had to equate what Joe does in America and just what Brian does in England and the type of guests and the content, I think Brian has the point of difference. It's his platform is bordering on it's educational and it's classy and professional. Not saying Joe's isn't, but Joe's is more like a fireside,
mates,
drinking with the blokes.
Mates show, yeah.
Yeah, I think Brian's consistency, how consistent he is, episode in and episode out, I think that's important.
Joe brings more of his friends on, right?
He does that, and you know, Joe has a lot of different sides to him. Some of the episodes, I just turn off, and some of them I watch like five times over and over.
Yeah,
and I guess his inconsistencies make him, you know, he's the pod father for a reason.
That's for sure, man.
But Brian has been on Joe's show.
Yeah, he has.
So like he's stepped. I know you and I both see things in Brian that we want to possess ourselves. So, and guys listening at home, I know some of our friends and fans were interested in starting a show, tune into this one, man. He's going to give you a lot of insight.
Hell yeah. So, guys, just remember, if you could please share this with your friends, subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, and please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Really helps us grow. It's a couple of seconds out of your time, and like I said, just helps us appear in a lot of these iTunes searches. So, you know, more people, the intent from us is to get our content to as many people so they can start using it and applying it in their own life. So it's one of those things that, you know, we just want to share with the world. So if you can help us grow that way, we would be, you know, very grateful and appreciated to you.
We appreciate you guys supporting the cause. I'm going to give a special shout out to one of our listeners, Kevin Tomlinson, man. Keep supporting us. You've been with us since the jump. Loving the feedback you give, and I'll see you in the gym.
Thanks, Kevin. Let's appreciate that. Johnny, social media stuff?
Yeah, man. Follow me, Johnny Stofko, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube channel. Also, if you want to check the shows out, I have, if you go to johnnystofko.com, you'll be able to check what that site's all about, and I got the podcast on there as well.
Check that out, boys and girls. Guys, I'm at Tristan Cannell Fitness on all the social medias, and you can find me at TristanCannellFitness.com. Guys, next week, like I said, Melissa, Brian, so don't miss it, and we will see you next week.
Take care. Peace.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are 2 for 2.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.